Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Talk about it. Talk about it.
I need to create an official dance for that intro.
You do. There's also a certain part where it sounds like someone is burping.
That part?
No. It's separate.
Huh. I don't know about that. That might just be me burping. You never know.
I hope so.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to Let's Talk About That. I am so late. I'm so far behind schedule this week. This episode was supposed to come out on Saturday. As is typical, we had a super busy weekend. If you don't already know, I'm joined today by my wonderful wife, Rachel.
Hello, lovely people.
Lovely people.
Lovely.
I'm going to bring you up just a little bit. You're just a teens quiet. There we go. That's better.
Perfect.
Perfect.
It's perfect. I love it.
It is perfect. So anyways, I warned you guys last week when Annie was on, and actually I think even before that, that Rachel was going to be joining us finally.
Sorry, guys.
I have gotten many a request for you to be on the show, so.
Oh, really?
It's great that it's finally happening.
It's nice.
It is nice. So, little backstory on the two of us. Oh, by the way, before we get too far beyond this, I am going to give you a double header at the start of the week here, so don't be shocked if you see two episodes. As soon as we finish up here, I'm going to go do my usual beginning of the week check-in, get us all caught up. Back to it. I'm drinking Basil Hayden's. Rachel is drinking some fancy wine.
Yes, it's called The Bridge.
She's drinking a bridge. It's a cab. The only wine worth drinking is cabs and maybe the occasional mixed red. Maybe.
I'd say Moscato is good.
Mm.
Also mead.
Ooh.
Even though that's not
Mead's
technically
good.
Wine.
That's honey wine. Yeah,
I almost got...
It counts.
Is it Oliver's that makes the Camelot mead?
Yeah, for those of you that don't know that are here in the Indy area, Oliver, a local... it's not a distillery. Winery? There we go.
Yeah, winery.
They make a mead. They have Camelot and...
They have a few other ones.
Really flavorful. Oh, and
yeah.
If you're hearing birds, you're not crazy. We are actually out in our backyard doing this today.
It's quite gorgeous.
Perks of summertime.
It's beautiful.
Perks of summertime. I think I'm going to only do this when we move to Florida. I'm only going to do outdoor episodes. Because why wouldn't
you? Maybe
you
can hear you'll probably be able to hear the gators growling.
The gators growling.
The
Today, you'll hear
rattling.
Birds and you'll probably hear the kids at the football field in our backyard, basically, from Bishop Chittard High School.
Also, you might.
Now they know where we live.
Oh, no. Lock your windows. Lock your doors.
Hide your kids. Hide your wives. Okay, anyways, so Rachel and I have been together for 9 years this June 6th, 4th, 6th.
Wow.
I'm
impressed.
It's
the 6th.
The
it's
sixth.
D-Day.
Okay, it's D-Day. That's how we commemorate our relationship is with D-Day. That's how long we've been together. We've been married for 4 years this May. So a long time.
It's been a while.
We're both 25, so you do the math.
A good portion of our lives
yeah.
have been spent together.
Yeah, most. Almost half. I was
thinking
about
that. Almost a third.
More than a third. More than a third. In 2.5 years, 3 years, we will have spent half of our lives together. Doesn't that hurt your brain?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
It's bonkers.
That's crazy.
So we want to be really clear about this because we're going to be mostly just talking about marriage. The purpose of this episode is not to pretend like we have everything figured out, obviously. But we have been together a lot longer than some, especially celebrity relationships.
Yeah.
This has lasted longer than every marriage the Kardashians have had with the exception of Kim and Kanye.
Wow.
We've outlived them all.
That's pretty exciting.
So I want you to be cognizant of that when you're hearing us talk about this. We're not trying to talk down to anyone or pretend like we've figured it all out. If anything, this is, you know, for us, this is just something to look back on at some point. And
yeah.
Be like, oh, that's how we thought at that point. We were dumb.
Yeah, probably. We'll probably think that we're pretty stupid. But
And maybe offer some sound advice to people who are earlier on in marriage, because I think the thing that you have to remember is, you know, your parents are going to have great advice for you or whoever you're sort of, whoever the person that sort of mentors you through life, they might have great advice for you, but there's a good chance they've been married like 20 plus years or however long.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since they were in those first years of marriage. So honestly, their advice is fairly anecdotal because it's been so long. Your brain just doesn't remember things that clearly for that long.
Yeah.
The human brain just doesn't work like that. That's why it sucks when some like older person gives you like first year of marriage advice and you're just like, oh, you don't know anything.
It was perfect. It was the best year of our life.
It was magical compared to how terrible it is now. It's so true though.
Yeah.
So take this all with that grain of salt. That
we're just chit-chatting about our experiences as a married couple. It's just a couple in general.
So many experiences. You know, it's fascinating. I don't know if you've ever really been aware of this. High school sweetheart relationships, which is technically the category we fall into since we met just after freshman year of high school. They rarely last. And if they lead to marriage, that marriage usually ends in divorce fairly quickly.
Wow.
I didn't know if you knew that.
Mm-mm.
And I think the reasoning is pretty obvious. You change a lot from 16
to
25.
You change so much. And I feel like even in the years that we've been married since I was 21, you were 22.
21. Yeah, we were both 21.
We were both 21. Okay. So I feel like we've changed so much since then that, I mean, it's awesome that it's worked out, but it's still kind of crazy to think about because we got married so young. And I feel like most people that I know that got married that young, quite honestly, are not very happy.
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
Now, we happen to know quite a few people who have been in those kinds of relationships and have gone on to get married, like your parents and your grandparents. And they're obviously all very happy.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about it is because pretty much ever since we got married, I've always told people who start dating at our age, like high school age or whatever, that it's a terrible idea and they should break up. Because we are very much the anomaly in that situation.
Yeah.
Most people have no clue what they want at that age. And to let themselves think they've like found the one at 16, I think is a terrible. Because here's the thing. I say that because if someone is genuine and they know that they're with the person they're supposed to be with, they won't listen to my advice anyways.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's important. And I think that's interesting because we went through the exact same thing.
Well, and I think too, like, there are so many major decisions that you make in that time.
Yeah.
Like the 16 to 20, like.
Yeah, like college,
you're deciding
career.
What you're doing for the rest of your life.
Or you should be.
Hopefully. Yeah. I mean, you might not be. I mean, you and I were 25 and we're kind of just now deciding what we're going to be doing for the rest of our lives. But I feel like there's just so much going on. I feel like you should just focus more on yourself during that stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's wrong to, like, date, but I think keep it casual, you know?
Yeah.
Don't overcommit yourself. That's very important because most people, you know, that's not a stage in your life where you're responsible enough to, that you should have to be making those kinds of decisions, you know? You're young. And I think what's interesting is I think we both kind of approached our relationship that way when we were that age. Like, we took it seriously, but we were having fun.
We were, but
like we dated like we were just high schoolers, but we both had the intention of marriage.
Absolutely. And well, that's what I was just going to say is I feel like from pretty early in our relationship at 16 years old, we made it clear to each other that we were dating with the intent of figuring out if we want to spend the rest of our lives together. And I feel like that's anytime I've ever told anyone that, because they're always like, why are you still with the same person? Or like, that's crazy that worked out. I'm like,
yeah,
it is. But we were very clear with our intentions from the get-go.
Yeah, you should do everything with intention, regardless of your age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you should have as the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People says, you should always begin with the end in mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You should always be like, okay, I'm doing this, and this is where I want this to lead to.
Absolutely.
Now let's enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
I think that's so important. So important. So that's the first thing I wanted to kind of get into is the fact that I think something that's unique about our relationship is that from the day we started dating, everyone in our lives was trying to convince us that it was a terrible idea.
Yeah, literally everyone.
We were both raised very religious, and we started dating while we were both going to, what do you call it? Not
youth
Sunday
group.
School. Youth group, thank you. Youth group, which is like Sunday school for high schoolers, for those of you who don't know. And the day we started, or the week we started dating, Rachel's high school youth leader, youth pastor, started a series on why dating is wrong. And that series went on for at least two or three months.
Yeah. It went on for a while.
It was excessive.
Yeah, that was, I mean, maybe it just was a coincidence, but I don't really think so.
Yeah.
And there were definitely a lot of,
her parents were very against it. My parents were against it. They didn't want us to call each other boyfriend and girlfriend. We were 16 at the time, by the way.
Yeah.
They didn't want us to call each other boyfriend or girlfriend. They wanted us to use like stupid made up names, like special friend. And they just pushed back in every way possible. They tried to humiliate us socially. They made it as difficult as possible for us to be together. And I think that was actually very beneficial for us in a way.
I think so too, because I think if everyone would have been on our side, it would have been,
it's like we had no choice but to take ourselves seriously because no one else took it seriously.
Yeah. And with everyone like pushing us away and telling us that we shouldn't, I mean, the fact that we stayed together really showed that we really wanted to be together,
right?
Because the social pressure wasn't causing
no
us
one was
to
on
stop.
Our team. Right.
Yeah.
For especially for like the first, I'd say like first 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And it got progressively better after that. But for the first two and a half years, it was just an uphill struggle. Like nobody wanted us to be together.
It was just some big joke.
And just to be clear, our parents weren't like mean to us or anything like
no,
that. They
and
had
I
our best intentions in mind. We were young, you know?
We were. And I do think that, I mean, it's really hard to say, but I think after we got past the first year of being together, our parents were like,
yeah,
okay, maybe they are taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And I think from there, they kind of started to, I guess, be on our side. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the right words, but they weren't, they didn't treat us like a joke at that point.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
And to be fair, Derek's family was always and continues to be very, very welcoming of me. There was never any,
That's the weird thing about my family. They don't understand either of us. I know they're probably going to listen to this, so I just want you guys to know I love you all to pieces, but it's obvious to me that you guys don't understand some of the decisions we make, some of the lifestyle choices we have, like, you know, but they support us.
They do, regardless. And they always have, and they always have, and I know that they always will.
Right.
So I just want that to be clear that it was never, no one in your family was ever malicious towards me,
right,
or rude to me, or even, there were never really any blatant jokes about our relationship to my face.
I would say more the fact that they would sort of intentionally make it known to everyone in the room that our status was
not
dating,
okay,
but that
this
we were
fair.
Special friends or whatever. You know,
they
that
would
was
announce
sort of like intentional
as
humiliation.
That,
now, to be fair, I think in a big way, my parents were doing that to respect your parents' wishes.
I agree.
They've done that with other people, and they've done that with other relationships in my family. You know, it wasn't just us or anything like that, but your parents were very clear, like, we don't want you guys to be dating.
Yeah, and I mean, I have Ryan, who's been on the podcast, is my only sibling.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he had like, some casual girlfriends at that point, but it was never, like,
I
like
you.
We were
I like you too.
And you and I were serious pretty much off the get-go. I mean,
we were
casual about it, but our intentions were very serious.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that was very unusual to them.
Yeah.
And I'm their baby daughter. You know,
yeah,
I'm their baby
absolutely.
Girl.
Young only daughter and youngest child.
Yeah,
so my life was not easy. Especially since anyone who knows me or maybe even people who listen to the podcast know that my opinion of what people think of me is not that... It's not super relevant to my decision-making process. Like, it affects me, you know, like, if someone thinks negatively of me or positively, like, that affects me, but it doesn't affect my decision-making
process.
You're not going to
let it run your life.
Right. I'm not going to stop dating you or whatever because people don't like that, you know. That's never going to be... I do what I want is basically what I'm trying to say. So I think that's the only way I was able to push through the minutia at the beginning of the relationship. So I say that to say, if you are 16, 17, maybe even 18 years old, and you're with someone and you feel like everything is telling you not to be with that person and you push through that, that may be a sign that you guys are really right for each other. It may
be.
Yeah,
you know, it may be.
It's always circumstantial, but don't feel down about yourself that people aren't on your team. You know what I mean? Especially if you're young.
Especially if you're young, absolutely. And yeah, I don't know what I was going to add to that, but...
So anyways, that was kind of the beginning of our relationship. It was difficult. It was tough.
It was.
And then we hit our 20s, And that's when people would ask us every day, when are you going to get married?
Oh, God.
And because they knew we had kind of at that point gone through the portal of like, okay, now you're like young adults, you know, you're 18, you're doing this, doing that. And I remember one time just before I started my first year of college, my dad sat down with me and he was basically just like, look, you need to be real. Like, what's the end game here? Like, you're about to go to college. Are you going to date this girl for 5 years, five more years before you get married? And I was just like, yeah, that's what I got to do.
Yeah.
And we didn't get married for another 3 years. I didn't end up staying in college. I hated it. Yeah. I'll do an episode on that someday. I've kind of talked about it before, but why I think the college system is a scam. But, you know, that was the first time I really evaluated on a very serious level, like, you know, am I willing to stick this out for 5 years before we get married, like, to be dating? Because, again, both of our parents, very conservative, very religious, you know, so it's like, you know, especially at that age, we both wanted to have sex so bad.
Yeah.
And, like, to have that be a part of our lives. But it's like, okay, well, you know, you can't live together, you can't whatever, experience the joys of marriage until you're married, because even if you did, like, you'd disgrace both of your families and, you know,
exactly
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, am I willing to in a sense be miserable for 5 years? And that's when I knew for a fact. I was like, okay, yeah, I can handle that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tough, the whole having to wait so long to be able to live with each other. I mean, obviously it was worth it.
Yeah.
But that's another thing about starting to date so young. Like, if you're going to start dating now, like, do you realize how long you have to wait to... No, I mean...
And we changed a lot over those, like, first 4 years especially.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love how when I shake my feet, I can shake your microphone and mine.
And yours. Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, it's super tough. I mean, at that age, because it's like you're starting to taste independence for the first time. Like, you know, when you're 16, you get your driver's license, but you're not really like hanging out with friends on your own schedule and things like that until you hit like 17, 18.
Yeah.
And high school kind of ends and you start to have your own money and things like that. And I think that is the point where most high school relationships end.
Yeah, because you start making decisions on what kind of a person you're going to be.
Well,
oh,
and the pool
I'm
gets
gonna...
bigger. You don't have, you know, we both, especially us, you know, we were both homeschooled.
Yeah.
And so our pool of friends and relationship potential seemed very small in high school. And then you graduate and that pool becomes global in a sense.
Yeah.
So I think that's the point where most of those relationships fall apart. And it didn't for us.
Yeah.
I think that was when we actually, our relationship became more solid, is when we both started to have some freedoms in life, like our own money and cars and things like that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that was like the middle point. Then segueing from that into like what I call the pre-marriage phase.
Oh no.
Being engaged. We were only engaged for not even a full year, was it? Nine months?
Let's see, October to end of October to beginning of May. So that's what, 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah. And I made a mistake that I would, you know, I doubt anyone else is dumb enough to do this, but if I can offer any advice to like younger guys who are going into this stage of their life, live close. I moved 45 minutes away to have one last summer with my good friends at the time. And it was the worst decision I ever made because we like barely saw each other. And when we did, it was an annoyance because you had to drive almost an hour in either direction.
Yeah. And I had to drive on the interstate, which
you
I hate
like
driving on the interstate.
You had just been
and
in
I would
like
have
a
to
really
do it.
Bad accident.
Yeah. I was in an accident on the way to go see you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it was right after we got engaged, I think.
And she was in that accident, and it's like, here I am 45 minutes away. What am I going to do? So my advice is, if you have the opportunity to live close to your soon-to-be spouse before you get married, definitely do it. Don't move further away. It's a terrible idea. You need to be close because the engagement period is the worst.
It's really bad. It is so stressful, not only from a planning standpoint, but... Most people are going into marriage with the intention of staying with this person for the rest of their life.
Right. That should be your intention.
A huge decision.
Yeah.
That is huge. And that is a very stressful decision to make.
Yeah.
Whether or not you think it's the right decision, that's still a huge
decision. You start thinking about
things
like, okay, am I really going to have sex with one person forever?
Yeah.
And do I really want to move in with this person? And, you know, you start to feel very claustrophobic.
Oh, yeah. There is like a lot of questioning of, I mean, like, I've always been such a people pleaser where, like, before we were getting, like, I was just scared, like, well, maybe I've been with this guy for so long because we started dating so young.
Yeah.
And I've only stayed with him because I don't want to go through the embarrassment of being through a breakup. So therefore, right. like, am I making this decision just so I don't have to, like, go through what I thought at the time was the public humiliation of breaking up with someone.
Right. Right.
You know, and so, and aside from that too, it's just such a big decision, and planning a wedding is
it's really tough.
Difficult.
And we had a small wedding.
We did.
Can you imagine like a $50,000 wedding, like planning that? I mean, we had like a $5,000 wedding, if that.
Yeah.
It was a small wedding. We had friends like pitch in and help with things.
It was awesome. It was wonderful.
Great. I loved our wedding.
That's what I always suggest people to do.
It was probably the happiest day of my life.
Oh, absolutely.
Because just, it was one of those days where it's just like, I think what was unique about our wedding is that we really didn't care how things went down.
Oh, no.
It was like, everybody's here. All of our friends are here. We've got food. We've got, you know, everyone's in a good mood. Like, that's all that mattered. We were like, okay, we have to get this picture.
Make sure that this happens.
If anything, the pictures were an annoyance.
Yeah.
And frankly, our pictures turned out terrible. The photographer was awful.
Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast.
If he does, I don't think he does it full time anymore, so I don't feel bad saying that. I wasn't happy with the pictures.
I wasn't either.
But it's more than anything else that's happened in my life, our wedding is so ingrained in my mind that I don't need pictures. Like, I don't ever look at wedding
absolutely.
Pictures.
Oh, absolutely. I don't either.
Because it's just like, it's still fresh there. I'm sure someday it won't be as the brain ages, and I'll cherish those pictures, but for now I'm just like, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. I never really look back. I'm like, I wish we had some really cool wedding pictures and I could make it my profile picture on Facebook.
So the wedding happened, and your wedding day should be the happiest day of your life. If you're a bridezilla, it won't be. If you're a controlling man or woman, I hate that people say bridezilla, because guys can be the same way.
Yeah. And I always give this advice to women who are newly engaged, because I was given the same advice by my good friend Tabitha, who is married to James, who was on the episode or the podcast not too long.
We need to have her on sometime.
Yes, definitely. But she said to me, when I called her and asked her to be a bridesmaid, and she said yes, obviously, because I'm wonderful and she loves me. She said, there's always a lot of conflict around making plans for a wedding, because you want this, mom wants that, his mom wants this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And the most important thing,
both our moms are super chill.
They are. Yeah. But the most important thing to remember when planning a wedding, it is your wedding.
Yeah.
Do what you want to do. Screw what everyone else says.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they say, what they think. Take their advice. Do what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that made it so much less stressful for me.
Yeah. And it should. Yeah. That's great advice.
Because I didn't care what people thought about our wedding. I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
And we did it our way.
And we did it.
And
it was
awesome.
We had
Motorhead on our reception playlist.
We did.
We do what we want.
Yeah.
I do what I want. It was amazing. Our wedding day was great. The honeymoon was. Here's the thing about the honeymoon that I would advise people in. And not everybody is the same as us. But if you listen to this podcast and you enjoy it and you feel like we're kindred spirits in some way and you're similar to me, this is my advice to you. Just disappear. Go off the grid.
Completely.
I'm not saying don't do fun things while you're on your honeymoon. Like, that's your one shot at freedom.
Yep.
In my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a very small window of time where you don't have responsibilities and you can just be together. And you need that to carry you through.
Absolutely. And
the storm to come.
Especially for us, it was so important because we were working opposite schedules at that point. And
for the first year of our marriage.
Yeah.
We
hardly saw each other.
It was hell.
It was.
So I want to get in. That's kind of the meat of what I want to talk about, because we've never sat down and really discussed it.
No.
But I think that's the most that we have to offer. And again, I want to be clear here. This is not everyone's experience. But I think that the more I talk to other guys who have been married for about as long as we have, or maybe even longer, this seems to be like the unspoken truth of marriage that no one talks about. And that is that the first year of marriage blows hard.
Yeah, it's really,
it's awful.
Tough.
And that's why I don't really fault people who end their marriages early. I'm not saying I support it. But I am more upset by someone who ends their marriage after 30 or 40 years or 20, 30, 40, whatever, a yeah. long period of time. Because at that point, shame on you. You've made the decision to be with this
person. You've lied to yourself
for
so long. You've lied to the other person for
right.
so long.
You're just a bad person.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, you're not, it's on you.
I completely agree.
Because no, I'm sorry. After you hit like mid 20s, late 20s, onto the rest of your life, you don't change that much. Enough that it would like, unless you do something horrible, obviously, like cheat on the other person
yeah.
or whatever. But even then, you know, I'm not saying it's okay to cheat. It's one of the most heinous things you can do to another person. But, you know, I've seen plenty of relationships that have come back from something like that when they're at that 20, 30, whatever year mark. Again, I don't think a relationship can ever be truly repaired. I think that's the worst thing. I've never been able to wrap my mind around someone who would cheat on another person mm-hmm. at any stage of a relationship.
No.
I think it's the most disgusting thing you could possibly do. And yeah. I think it's cowardice. And I think that if you're going to do it, just go to the other person and say, hey, I want to sleep with other people. Let's just break up. Let's just
yeah.
get a divorce. Like,
why hang on
to
it?
That is so much better than just going... And in my opinion, your character is more intact for doing that than like
just being honest.
Yeah, than getting caught sleeping with someone. Your character is destroyed at that point.
Absolutely.
Anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a tirade, but it's something I get so heated about because the fact that anyone would cheat on another person is so despicable to me. I've never understood it, and now I feel like it's become a weird part of like of our culture.
Yeah.
Side chick. You know, whatever. Just like this idea that like it's just a normal thing.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so disgusting to me. You know, call it a conservative viewpoint. Call it whatever you want. I just think that there is a dignity and an honesty to committing yourself to one person.
Absolutely.
That is so lost. And it's weird. Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to go
no,
off on
I
a
mean,
rant there.
It's good. It's good. It's true.
Yeah. Just if you're even thinking about cheating on someone, just end the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
You owe it to yourself to be a decent human being.
Yeah.
Anyways, the first year of marriage. It's terrible, and we're going to tell you why. Do you want to go first, or should I? Why don't you go first? I love how we're both resting our noses on our microphones.
I mean, there's like this perfect indent for my nose and my lip.
Just a little nose rasp.
Yeah.
That was a nose sound.
I think I smell Annie.
You smell Annie?
Oh, man, why is the first year of marriage the worst? I think, I mean, our situation was, made it worse.
Yeah. Oh, and if I can just outline that. So right after we got married, I was working as an appliance installer, a commercial appliance installer. And pretty much right around the time we got married, my brother-in-law, who is my boss, had the... He was so benevolent to me in that job. He gave me the opportunity to be the warehouse manager, something that I was not equipped for, not prepared for, and not truly interested in, although at the time I thought I was because I only understood progression in career. I didn't understand goals. I only understood like, oh, this is a promotion, so it must be a good thing. You know, I was very young. Obviously, I was 21 at the time.
Yeah.
As soon as that happened, I was overloaded with work. I couldn't manage myself. I was working 50, sometimes 60 hours a week. I'd get up at 5 in the morning regularly, and I'd come home at like 5, 6, 7 at night. Meanwhile, Rachel was working as a groomer slash trainer, but mostly groomer at that time.
I think during the first year, I was just out on the floor, and I just started training towards the end of it. I was just working.
Maybe like the last half of that first year you were... grooming. I don't know, but you were also working like 40, 50 hours a week.
Yeah, I was working a lot at
But you
Petco,
worked 1 to
retail.
9.
Yeah.
So by the time you got home, I was passed out.
Yeah.
I was done for the day. You're like maybe we'd see each other for 30 minutes to an hour tops. So we had no real relationship. You know,
no.
we didn't talk, we didn't hang out, we didn't have the time to.
No.
And we became so distant over that first year. And we had
became bitter towards each other during
yeah.
that time too because everything that was going wrong was well, this person, like, their job does this and blah, 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 blah. I just think that we were so bitter towards each other because we were still learning to communicate in a marriage slash living together relationship.
Exactly. Because a lot of people, you know, some people live together before they get married. And while I don't personally have, like, a huge problem with that, here's the thing. Anytime you start living with another person, especially if it's a very long-term thing, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Because you don't sit around when you're dating and chat about, like, how you live your lives when the other person's not around.
Mm-mm.
So it takes a lot of adjustment and a lot of grace, which I did not have a lot of especially, to get used to how the other person lives their life while you're in the same space.
Yeah.
For instance, like, before we got married, it was very much my thing to get home, take my pants off. You know, I was an appliance installer, so I kind of wore the same outfit every day, which is kind of gross. But it was commercial, so there's no reason
you
to have
married.
Clean clothes every
you
day.
You weren't married.
Right. I would take my pants off, leave them where I set them, and the next morning, that's where they'd be. And Rachel is a clean person, which is something she's training me to be, but she would take my pants and clean them. So the next morning, I wake up and I'm like, where are my pants?
And I'm you know? And I'm asleep.
And she's passed out. I'm not waking her up.
And then he wakes me up and I'm mad.
Right, exactly. You know, just the roommate aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because you are roommates long
so
term.
It's so different.
And it's different than a roommate relationship because with a roommate, you can be like, you know what? This person is a douche. I don't want to live with this person anymore. As soon as this lease is done, I'm going to move in with somebody else.
Yeah.
You can't
or
do that
you can
in
just
marriage.
Go into another room.
Right, exactly. With marriage.
Whereas if you do that,
you
like, it's
together.
Clearly offensive, too, if you, like, walk into the other room.
Right.
I mean, people should be given space, but it's like you're obviously upset at this yeah. point or avoiding me.
Yeah, and it's tough. And I think it's fair to say there's a lot of arguments there. And it's difficult. That's
you're
all
getting
there is
used to
it.
All the little things. And
yeah.
those are the things that set people off the most.
Right.
You're getting used to all these little things and every single tiny little thing adds up and your bitterness is getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just difficult. It's just difficult and people really don't realize how difficult it is. And again, like I said, when we started talking about this, it's the unspoken truth of marriage. Like I think it's important and I think that's a lie that people tell to protect young couples. Cause who wants to hear like, hey, you're
this
about to do
gonna
this thing.
This is going to be terrible.
And then life is going to be really hard for you. Like nobody,
yeah.
then no one would get married.
No.
And there's this weird thing that married people do where they want to rope other people in. Cause they see the beauty
yeah,
of it.
Exactly.
We see
and
the
they're
beauty
always
of
like,
it.
Yeah, you should get married. Whereas, I mean, a lot of people that are getting married right now, you probably shouldn't get married.
Right. And there, in my opinion, there's nothing more beautiful that this life has to offer you than companionship.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
It is.
Even if things aren't always perfect, like just to have someone else that's on your team that you're
constantly
working through life with. Yeah.
Constantly. Through every single thing that you go through, they're there.
Right. You don't feel alone in the way that you do when you're single. And it's a beautiful thing. And for some people, the need for that doesn't come until later in life, and that's fine.
Or at all. I mean, some people,
yeah. For
yeah.
some people, they just don't feel the need for that. I don't understand it. But
props to them, though.
Yeah. So because of that, a lot of people are dishonest about the difficulties of the beginning of marriage. And
yeah.
I think it's important for you to have... It's always been my understanding, my feeling that expectations should be managed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember just before we got married, my sister got married and her husband went through a lot of the same difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say which sister. But they had a lot of similar struggles and I would hear them, you know, at the time I was very close with them. You know, we're still close with them, obviously.
Yeah.
But I would see them regularly enough that I could hear them talking about what was difficult about their relationship. And I would just kind of sit there on my not yet married high horse and be like, well, that won't be a problem for us. But what
yeah.
I was telling myself was, she'll kowtow to the way that I want to do things.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's what you think is going to happen in a relationship, that the other person
is
just going to serve
you. The other
you.
Person is going to be the one changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just an unhealthy mindset in all of marriage, in any part
oh,
of marriage.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's okay to communicate to someone else when you want something or when you want something to be a certain way. That's important. But at the same time, like, you can't expect the other person to just automatically, like, know how you want things to be,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, without any communication. It's so unfair. And I think I was much worse at this than you were, to be fair.
Yeah.
I just assumed you would know exactly what I wanted and that you would have 10 extra hours in the day to do it. Because I came from a very fortunate lifestyle where my mother... Her full-time job was as an educator to us. We were homeschooled, as I've mentioned before. That was her full-time job, was educating us. So my mom was always around. And, you know, she cooked a lot, just like your mom does.
Yeah.
She cooked a lot of the meals, or she at least, you know, had the groceries on hand so we could prepare our own food,
uh-huh.
whether that be, you know, cereal or whatever, you know.
Well, and that's like the exact same situation as my mom.
Right. Your mom cooks dinner every night.
Every single night. And
her full-time job is as a piano teacher out of her home.
Yeah.
Neither of us are fortunate enough to be in a situation where I'm the only provider and you don't work.
Yeah.
You know, it's more unrealistic these days.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It is.
As the cost of living continues to rise.
But, you know, as you're saying that, like that was difficult for me too, to see like, okay, well, you were raised with a mom that was home all the time, like a wife that was constantly cleaning, constantly making food, and same with my mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, we both see that. We both have that in our minds as an expectation, whether that's realistic or not.
Yeah.
And so, like, I felt like I was failing as a wife because I wasn't doing those things.
Yeah.
And then in your eyes, I mean, I don't know if you thought that I was failing as a wife, but...
Oh, totally. I'll be honest. The first year of marriage, I thought you were like, didn't care about me at all because you weren't like, you know, and it's a disgusting misogynistic viewpoint that a lot of young guys need to work themselves out of. But I expected you to wait on... I don't remember the term off the top of my head right now, but wait on me hand and foot. That's the term.
Yeah.
Well, I expected you to wait on me hand and foot and have meals ready for me when I came home, even though you didn't even...
Even though I wasn't home until you were home.
Exactly. You have these expectations that the other person, or at least I did. I don't want to speak for you, but like I had these expectations that you would just like run my life for me and I would be the king in my castle. Because
how
in a lot
nice
of ways, that's
you.
How my family worked, which is a beautiful service that in a relationship that my mother and father had that I didn't fully understand at the time.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we got, you know, it wasn't even until the last year or so that I've really started to understand the different sacrifices that both my mother and father made that made them equal but different in their relationship.
Yeah.
My dad worked his ass off to provide for our massive family.
Yeah.
He worked tirelessly, and as a thank you and as a compliment to that service, my mom worked her ass off to, you know, again,
teach you guys, raise
teach
you
us,
guys,
raise
feed
us,
you,
handle a lot of, not all the upbringing, obviously. My father was very much a big part of my upbringing, but she managed the home.
Yeah.
You know, she cooked and she educated us and she cleaned and, you know, she educated us in how to clean so that the house was always immaculate.
Yeah.
Well, not always immaculate, but
I mean,
cleaner than most people's homes.
Yeah.
Like, I see some people's homes and I don't understand it because my mother, she was very passionate about us having a clean home, you know.
Absolutely. So is mine.
Exactly. And that's just not our relationship.
No.
It's just not. So I was bitter towards Rachel. I think you were bitter towards me, but also bitter towards yourself that first year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was bitter towards you because I knew that you felt that way. And in my mind, I knew that my expectations were not realistic.
Yeah.
But I still didn't act on that knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, I still stressed about everything. I would stay up late cleaning. I would wake up to clean. And, I mean...
Yeah.
Food was always, you know, I was just like, I guess I'll get some chicken
dishes
nuggets.
Would pile up. Because I want to be clear, I was not helping at all.
No.
I wouldn't do the dishes. I wouldn't clean because I was the king of my castle and I don't have to do that. That's your job.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. I wouldn't do my own laundry. I would, you know, it was horrible. And frankly, it's not the way I was raised. And I have to apologize to you. And I also have to apologize to my own mother and father for thinking that that was any kind of a way for a husband to be, because it's not.
Yeah.
It's just not. So my exhortation to young guys out there on the precipice of marriage is just, you need to understand that you are 50% of this, and whatever gender roles you think exist in a marriage, just forget it. Just
yeah,
be a helper.
It's just, yeah.
There's always going to be jokes. There's always going to be stereotypes. He doesn't do the dishes. Mm-hmm. She doesn't, you know. Do the freaking dishes.
Yeah.
If you see the dishes need to be done, you do them. Nobody has time to do the dishes.
Yeah.
Nobody has time to do laundry.
No. No one wants to do that. It's the worst.
You have to be self-sufficient in a marriage to support the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just so lost. And, you know, maybe the dynamic of your relationship is very much that the man provides the income and the woman is doing most of the housework.
Yeah.
You know, there was a small period of time where I was the only one working full time. You only worked about like 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
And
that's what it was.
As a compliment, you did a lot of cleaning,
cooking, laundry. Yeah,
and
that was my whole day.
Where we're at right now for the, you know, pretty much until we move, you're also working very much full time.
Yeah.
40 plus hours a week. As am I. And so, you know, it's very much a trade-off. You'll
it
do
is,
dishes
but
one
the
night,
cool
I'll do
thing,
them another night.
The really cool thing about us both working full-time is compared to the first year of our marriage when we were both working full-time, we now have the same schedule.
Yeah.
So we have the same days off. We work pretty much the same hours except for Saturdays.
Yeah.
I mean, you go into work early for me because you're a sweet baby angel.
But that was when they hired Rachel. That was like the one term that I required. I was like, look, she's not going to come in at 7:30. It's just not going to happen. I'll come in at 7:30 and do her job until 9.
I am not a morning person. I will make myself late until I arrive at the time that I feel like I should arrive.
I respect it. I respect it. Some people aren't meant to be bound to a schedule like that. I don't think it makes you unpunctual. I just think it's just a different...
I can't do
mornings.
Your brain
works in a different way.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And I mean, my brain is weird. And I can't be productive 9 hours a day. I'm sometimes productive, very productive, much more so than other people for 2 or 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then I just float for the next couple of hours.
Yeah, and I
can
think
be like that sometimes. But yeah. Anyway, sorry, I keep derailing us from the conversation. I apologize. But so I want you to have the floor.
Bonzo's eating a stick.
Bonzo, what are you doing?
Bonzo, no.
Our doggies are out here with us right now.
They're being terrible.
Someday I'll post a picture of the doggies for those of you who don't know us well enough to know our dogs.
Sorry, what was the question?
I want you to have the opportunity now to kind of recall what that first year was like before I go into the first year going into the second year, and maybe offer any advice for ladies or men in really either in their first year of marriage.
It's a very loaded question. It's hard for me because I have lived my entire life trying so hard to not live in the past. That I feel like I forced myself into bad memory because something happens and I'm like, eh, screw it. I'm just not going to think about this anymore. But I think a lot of what we've already touched on as far as...
I'm going to steal some of your wine.
Yeah, please do. It's delicious. As far as just unrealistic expectations of what is required of a woman in a relationship. It was tough. I mean, my mom is, she's all that I strive to be in a
Rhonda
woman.
Rhonda is a saint.
Like, she is seriously like...
No joke, at one point before we got married, your parents had just come over with you to my parents' house. That was when I still lived at home. And my dad and I were sitting on the back porch talking, which is, you know, there. I feel like him and I, when we talk alone together, it feels so awkward for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm bad at that kind of conversation.
Well,
but I always learn so much.
Yeah.
When he just like drops a little nugget of wisdom on me. But what he said is, he was like, son, every woman turns into her mother, and that woman is a saint. He said something along those lines. Basically,
yeah.
Like, she's going to turn into a very good person because her mother is such a good person.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I can only hope and pray that I do someday become like her. But my mother was raised on a farm.
Right.
As what the typical woman was expected to be in that time in, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever, whenever she was home.
Yeah.
And, I mean... And that's how she ran our house. It was, we had dinner at 6 o'clock every single evening. We, you know, had a set list of chores and she did all of this. And it was just like, she would wake up every single day at 5:30 and start her day. And I mean, she ran on a schedule. She was constantly getting things done. She made delicious homemade meals from scratch every single evening. I mean, Hamburger Helper, I didn't even hear of until I went to a friend's house.
Right.
And I mean, as we got older, sometimes, you know, we'd make our own lunches. But I mean, other than that, I mean, she's just like, so I am obviously very, very grateful that I got to be raised under that.
Yeah.
And that.
No pressure.
Yeah. There was pressure. But I mean, and I hope that one day that, if the stars align and that's, you know, you work full time and I stay at home or whatever it be, I hope that someday I can be that. But
that's
at the time,
it is,
it is, it is. But, you know, at the time, there were
not
just...
Not that I expect you to cook and clean, by the way.
I do love cooking, though. It's a new hobby I want to get into. I want to become...
I love cooking, too. We should get into it together.
We should.
You heard it here first, folks. We're getting into
cooking.
That's our new thing.
But, you know, so there were... I was just exhausted. I was working 40-plus hours retail at a pet store.
With women, a lot of women who were divorced or very bitter towards their relationships.
Yeah.
Which I think doesn't help.
No.
Even though you had good reason to be upset at that time.
Yeah. And so I think that was really difficult for me to work 40-plus hours a week and then also feel like I'm supposed to make dinner, but I don't get home until 9.
Right. And I'm usually already asleep anyways.
So I guess, hopefully I'll just go run by and get McDonald's. And yeah. I mean, I was working 40 plus hours a week and making like $400 a paycheck.
It is ridiculous. You were paying for our insurance at the time.
I was basically paying for our insurance and...
Oh, and it's retail.
I mean,
they paid you minimum wage.
Yeah, basically.
Here's the thing. If I can just go off on a little bit of a tangent real quick. Here's why I hate retail so much. Because from a young age, it teaches people that they're only worth $8 an hour.
Yep.
And that, here's a pay raise for you. We're going to give you another 10 cents an hour. No. You need to understand that if you're driven and you're motivated and you figure out what you want out of life, the sky is the limit on what you're worth.
You don't have to work retail.
You don't have to work retail. Think bigger. Always think bigger. I'm not rich. I want to be very clear about that. I'm not rich. We're very much middle, even lower middle class.
Yeah.
But I make money that I dreamed of making in my 30s right now. Not because there's something special about me, because there's really not. The only thing is that I realized what I wanted in life, and I didn't let anything hold me back. I just kept working towards it.
And yeah, your butt off.
That is my charge to man, woman, anyone out there. Figure out what you want. It's tough. Figure out what you want out of this life and just go after it. Because there's money. If you figure out how to do something the right way, for instance, I love photography. I found a way to make money doing that. I'm not a photographer. It's not my full-time job. My point is, figure out what you want and just go after it. Don't let yourself get trapped in a 9-to-5 or whatever retail job where you make minimum wage, because you're worth more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the same can be said about working a desk job. That's what I do right now. And to be honest, it's terrible for me.
Yeah,
it's bad for me.
It's an intermediary job, for sure.
And I love the company that we work for, but I'm just not meant for a desk job.
And it's okay.
And whether that means that I need to be home more.
Some people have more to offer the world in non-conventional ways. I think you have more to offer the world when you're not working 40 hours a week and you're not worried about how much money you're making.
Yeah, for sure. But
Let anyone tell you that that's not as worthy as someone who works, you know, makes however much money and works however many hours a week. It's all about making the world a better place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, high expectations from myself and from you, that made things really difficult because I constantly felt like a failure, constantly. Every single day I wake up feeling like just a piece of garbage.
Right.
And then on top of that, when you were let go.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm going to get into that here
in
a minute.
Okay. Do you want to get into that now or do you want me to start it?
Yeah, I guess we're kind of there. So basically right at the end of our first year of marriage. So we got married in May. So I guess I shouldn't say the end. So we got married in May. In November, the company I worked for laid off half of their staff. They basically offered all the installers contractor deal, and it was a joke of a contract. We would have made no money comparatively. We all would have taken like $10,000 to $20,000 pay cuts, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we basically were just like, hey, instead of that, how about this? And made a counteroffer.
Yeah.
At which point they said, fire all of them. And they fired everyone. We had 3 or 4 people on staff who were veterans. They fired them on Veterans Day. It was a disgusting company. We were one of the best appliance crews that has ever existed. We would do, I don't want to get too into it, but we would turn around projects despite their poor management as owners. We would turn around projects in ridiculous windows. You know, all that being said, a lot of good guys lost their jobs.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. And I saw friends of mine that I had worked with who were veterans get drunk and have, like, major PTSD issues, start fighting each other. I mean, you remember the one time guys started having a fist fight in our house, and one guy had to, like, bear hug the other guy and, like, calm him down because he was losing his mind. And it's just, it's so, and they were both, or they weren't both, the guy who was losing his mind was a combat veteran, injured in the line of duty, and they fired him on Veterans Day. They're just disgusting people.
I'm out of work now.
No, it's November. I'm out of work. Rachel's still working 50 hours a week, making next to nothing still. Yeah. We're very much paycheck to paycheck at that time, so we don't really have
Even less than paycheck to paycheck.
Less than paycheck to paycheck. We have no money to fall back on. We overdraw both of our bank accounts by $500, $600, $700, something like that. We can't pay any of our bills for about 2 months. So they all get sent off to collections. Yeah. It's wintertime. Our heat gets turned off. It was by far, I think you would agree, the darkest point in our lives.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we both just wanted to kill ourselves. We just wanted out.
It was horrendous. And I mean, it was
bad. It was real bad.
There was just, I mean, thank God we were living with Justin at the time, which, again, that's another thing where people are like, oh, well, you know, you're married. You should live on your own and blah, blah,
that's
blah.
So
and
stupid.
It's like, you know what? Communal living is okay.
Exactly. And it's not like we sleep in the same room.
No. And at that time, the house that we were living in, there was an addition that Justin was living on.
Yeah, like a separate
apartment.
And
he paid his bills separately. And because of him, we could put extension cords to our side of the house and put a heater in our room.
It's stupid.
We had to shower on his side of the room. I mean,
it was
for a lot of people, this is going to be the first time.
Did we ever have to? Our water got turned off, or didn't get turned off.
No, the pipes froze.
The pipes froze because it's a very old house.
It was so cold.
And broke and burst, and our landlord tried to sue us for the damage because he was like, even though you weren't negligent, my insurance company will tell me that you are, and then I have to sue you. So I want you to pay for half of this $2,000 repair. I ended up actually fixing it myself, and it was fine.
I mean, thank God. I mean,
which
to
is
be
how
honest,
I learned that I never want to be a rentee ever. Ever.
It's tough.
Because I can fix things myself.
Yeah.
I don't need some jerk trying to. Anyways, I don't want to get into that. He was a disgusting human being.
So
I was out of work for 2 months.
Yeah.
And that was the lowest point in my life by far. I was already a very depressed person. That's something I've always dealt with. But not only was I out of a job, but I didn't enjoy being an appliance installer by any means. Like, it wasn't fun, except for the fact that I was working with my hands, which is something I've always enjoyed, more as a hobby. It wasn't fun. The hours were brutal. And while I was making fairly good money, it wasn't worth it. It just wasn't.
Yeah.
My health was in... I was eating probably the worst I've ever eaten in my life, but I didn't have any vision for what I wanted in life. Like, I had no next step lined up.
Well, and I think you were comfortable, too.
Oh,
to an extent, with the fact that you were making really good money. And I think that that's just where so many people are. Like, it's like, well, I'm making good money. I'm miserable, but I'm also kind of comfortable, so I'm just going to stay where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when you work on those next steps that you start to make money and you start to really live life, I think. But anyways, I was at the lowest point in my life. Our marriage was very quickly falling apart. We both kind of hated each other, I think it's fair to say, at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were working 50 hours a week, and here I am just sitting around at home.
Well, that's what I was going to get into, is that I became painfully bitter towards you.
Yeah, because I wasn't doing anything.
And I was completely...
I'd watch TV all day.
I was...
Or play video games.
Not understanding of how you were feeling.
Oh, and I wasn't communicating either, so...
No, you weren't, but... So, I come home and I still have the expectation that I'm the one that needs to be cleaning the house, doing laundry,
even though I've been
making
sitting there
dinner
in my pajamas all day.
And in my mind, I'm starting to get like, hey, like, maybe I'm not the one that needs to be doing this. Like, I was kind of turning around to the fact that it doesn't have to be the gender roles that were put in place in the 50s.
Yeah.
Like, you've been sitting on your butt all day.
Mm-hmm.
You can get up and do stuff.
Yeah.
And
And that motivation was huge for me because that got me moving around, which I desperately needed. Yeah. If you're struggling with depression, the best thing you can do is be active.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that looks like for you, whether that's working very hard or doing physical exercise or just getting up and cleaning your house.
Yeah.
You know, so Rachel pushing me was huge at that time. I needed it. And, you know, also my father was very helpful to me at that time. He helped me line up some interviews with a couple different companies, mm-hmm. which I attended. And I think I did very well, but I just wasn't getting positive responses because I didn't really care about any of them. You know, no. I really should have pushed myself a lot harder, but I knew I didn't want to do any of these jobs. It was just, they were just jobs.
Yeah.
So I then, had a very close friend at the church that I was spending way too much time at. And that's something I'm going to talk about in my, my next episode, that's going to be coming out the same day as this one. But I was spending 20, 30 hours a week at church, which was the wrong thing to do. It was a disgusting church. They manipulated me and were happy to have me offer free labor to them, without any kind of help, even though they knew we were in a really tough place.
That was difficult for me.
That was tough.
Because I saw how much work you were putting in.
Yeah, and at the even time, physical how much labor.
Yeah, and you were, and it wasn't just time; it was love and energy. Like you were so invested in the people that you were serving with, and I mean, they just. Yeah. I mean, the church that I grew up in, there was a benevolence offering at least once a month.
Yeah.
And that would go to help people out. And I remember asking mm-hmm. you during that time, hey, do you think like...
they could help us pay bills.
Do you think that they could help us pay bills right now?
And I was unwilling to let anyone know that we were struggling financially because I was raised to be a provider. And I was like, if anyone knows that I'm not like making enough money for us to live...
it'll then be shameful.
Then they're going to shame me and I can't have any... I won't let anyone know. And even now, you know, we've talked to our parents about this on some level. And every time, especially my dad's like, I had no idea this was happening.
Yeah, my parents are the same way. And anytime I've talked to your sister about it before when I first it was probably about a year ago. I like sat down and talked to her about it because I mean, yeah, it was embarrassing. We didn't know what we were doing with our money, but at the same time, we were put in a terrible spot.
Yeah.
Terrible
spot. And, you know, eventually I had a really good friend of mine, who owns a company called Force Technology Solutions, who worked with the church that I was serving so much at, who offered me a job doing pro AV installation, big church sound systems, broadcast systems, stuff like that. And it wasn't phenomenal money, but he was such a good friend to me. He would give me big advances on my paycheck so we could pay our bills and
was incredible.
Keep the electricity on. And, you know,
we got that job at the perfect time.
The house we were, absolutely. The house we were renting was so dilapidated. The electric bill would be close to $1,000 every month in the winter.
Every month.
Which we definitely could not afford.
And our rent was $1,200.
And our rent was $1,250.
$1,250.
We couldn't afford either of those things.
No.
Going into that, we could. But that's another piece of advice I'll give young married couples is always don't ever plan on spending 100% of what you can afford.
Yes.
That's so foolish.
Try to live as cheap as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. It's hard because you see people who have things that you want in life, maybe even people who are at the same place in life as you, but you will be so much, we would have been so, as much as I loved living with Justin at that time, we would have been so much better off if we just lived in a small apartment and, you know, unfortunately, we had four dogs.
Made the decisions to have four dogs.
But even just a small home. You know, we were looking at the home across the street, literally across the street from him. It was only $800 a month, and it was in much better shape. There was a pedophile living in an apartment back door, in the backyard, a former pedophile, registered sex offender. So that was, like, the number one deterrent for me. But, that would have been a much better situation. And there was someone I worked with when I worked for HA, who told me something that was very, very, very inspirational. This guy, most people would probably consider a burnout. He smoked weed every day and worked at a pizza shop part-time. His wife's parents owned it. And at some point he was planning on leaving to manage the pizza place. And in my mind, everything in me told me that this guy was a loser. One day he rolls up to work on a brand new Triumph speed triple. Is that the name of the bike? It's a very nice motorcycle. Mm-hmm. It's probably about $9,000 new. And at that time, I was very into motorcycles. I still am. I just don't have the money for them right now.
Right now.
I used to, yeah, someday. I used to commute on a motorcycle. It was so fun.
That was awesome.
But he rolls up on this thing, and I'm making, you know, probably the same amount, if not more, than this guy. And I couldn't even dream of affording that. Yeah. I was like, dude, how did you afford that? And he just looked at me, and he knew a little bit about, like, how we spent our money and things like that. He just looked at me, and he said, my wife and I live within our means. And that just changed my whole world.
Yeah.
Even though it's such a simple sentiment, just the idea of just like, you know what? Like, we can afford this, so let's do something that's 25% less than that. Just
yeah, like that exactly. Idea. You don't have to live in the kind of lifestyle that you can afford.
Right. You can, yeah. He's like, we live within our means. We have extra money. We spend it on what we want to spend it on. And I was just like, that's what I want. Like, that's what I want to do in life. And that's been so inspirational for me, because now it's just like, I feel like I always try to budget, you know, and I'm definitely not perfect with money by any means, but I always try to budget extra money to spend on the things that I want to spend it on.
Yeah, excellent.
Tattoos, yeah, camera absolutely. Equipment. That's more for work now these days, but anyways, so we come out of that first year
but
of marriage. But mostly tattoos. We come out of that first year of marriage. I've got a job now. Rachel's got a job, but she's miserable. She hates it, understandably. She's been working like a dog. Literally working
four
like a
dogs.
Dog. We're trying to afford the dog food.
With dogs.
They never went without food, and we fed them good food. We probably fed them, I always used to say, they eat better than I do.
They did.
They did. Drinking wine out of a whiskey glass is kind of funny. But, so we come out of that year into our second year. We're a little bit more financially competent. We're still in this house for a little while longer. It wasn't that much longer, was it? It was only like, what, 2 or 3 months into the year until
we moved in September, yeah.
Yeah, so it was almost
nine more months, yeah.
Exactly. And
but at this point, you were working with AJ and doing the moving.
That was only during the summer.
Oh.
So AJ's company, which is blown up now, at the time had slow times, as a lot of very small companies do. And during the summer, he could only afford to have me work about 20 hours a week, which didn't work for us because we needed to pay the bills. You know, we were still recovering from the extreme debt that we had put ourselves in, you know, with me being unemployed.
And we learned how to work that bank account, though.
We learned how to work that overdraft. Oh. But at that point, I started working part-time as a mover. Which was weirdly good for our relationship, I think, because I felt like I was actually contributing again.
Yeah.
I was working hard, at least, you know.
We were finally past the point where we were just making it.
Yeah. We had a little bit of extra money to go out and things like that. And it felt to me like a year and a half to 2 years in, I feel like, is when our relationship started.
Yeah.
Or our marriage relationship.
Yeah.
Like the 2 years before that. You know, we might have been legally married, but we were just shitty, you know, pardon my French, but we were just really terrible roommates at that point.
Yeah,
So I say all this. I don't want to keep just, like, going play by play through our relationship. But I say all this because I want people who are younger than us, who are in the beginning stages of marriage, to know that it's not easy.
No.
And there's no guarantee that it will be easy. But unless you talk to old people, but if you keep working hard and you have the mindset that you're on a team together trying to make it through these situations, and you don't make the mistake I did, and you know, work in service toward each other, as hard as that can be, when you feel like you're owed things, I don't think it's possible to go into marriage without feeling like you're owed things, even if you don't realize it.
No, it's not.
But if, in spite of that, you can work in service towards the other person and just work hard to make your lives more comfortable, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine. It's not going to be easy, but you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. It's never easy.
No, it's not.
But it gets easier.
I think so. I agree with that. I mean, obviously, we still have our struggles, but
Everybody does.
Like, I feel like in our first year to 2 years of marriage, I mean, I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like we had a serious argument every single week.
Oh, yeah. And they didn't end because they,
neither of us were mature enough to, like,
end the argument. We would just bicker.
Yeah. And we would just hold on to it until we get over it. And then
a couple days would go by and maybe we would have sex. And so it'd be okay for the next day or two. Yeah. And then we'd argue the same argument again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing I wanted to kind of get into is don't let other people's idea of what your relationship is define what your relationship actually is. Like, we both learned kind of recently that a lot of our family members seem to think that we have, like, the most insane sex life ever.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's just, like, we're just, like, so... Our sex life is so cool.
It's crazy.
And I think a lot of people, like, see happy married relationships and they're, like, you know... They have this idea that especially, you know, we're getting a little PG-13, people. Turn it off if the kids are in
children.
The room.
Children...
You know, they have this idea that sex is something easy that can be figured out right away. Yeah. And then it's just perfect and you're having sex 5 times a day and all this, you know.
At least.
You know, not that he meant anything malicious by this, but my dad once said to me, like, you know, was basically warning me about getting fat after we got married because, you know, you're going to be eating so much food and you're going to be having sex every day. And it's just like, that doesn't happen for everyone. Sex is not an easy thing.
No.
Like, it gets better if you work at it.
Yeah.
It's like anything else in a relationship. You have to work at it.
Yeah, you have to communicate. Yeah.
You can't expect someone to just know what you need.
What's the right spot?
and you can't expect someone else to know what you need, and you can't expect that you automatically know what someone else needs.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you'll get lucky, but that's not a fair way. You know, they deserve just as much of an effort as you do. It works in both directions, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't want to go too far down that road, because I try to keep this podcast pretty clean, but I just wanted to make sure people know, like, if you're early on in your marriage and you're having issues with sex, whatever that may look like for mm-hmm. you, just know that it's okay, you know?
You're not alone.
Talk to each other. Be honest with each other.
Everyone, every single person in the world, for the most part, makes their sex life seem a lot better than it actually is. Because I don't either, but that's just how it is. I mean, not everyone is like that.
Sex is fun, and it's often funny, but it's rarely perfect.
Yeah.
It's not about being perfect. It's about just looking to make someone else happy and enjoy the fact that they're trying to make you happy. Like, that's all it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And people put so much, it's very important, but they feel like they need to have, like, if they're not having sex this much and they're not having this cathartic experience every time that something's broken or something's wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just, it makes me so sad, you know. We have kind of a, joke gift that we get everyone that we know when they get married, which is, not really a joke. Should I not talk about it? You gave me a weird look.
Your father listens to this podcast.
He'd probably get a kick out of it. I almost said maybe we should get one for them, but I'm not willing to go down that road. We get people this, again, I'm trying to keep the podcast relatively PG here. We get them a adult toy to assist in the bedroom. And while this toy is something that's beneficial to most people, it's very intimidating looking. As kind of a joke. not because everyone needs that. You know, some people... Just the way that, you know, everyone's different. Some people, they don't need anything, you know, to make
things happen.
To make their sexual relationship, like, fulfilling and to get everything they they want to give the other person or whatever. You know, they don't need anything else. Some people do. The point of it, though, is to put it in people's minds early on.
This is okay.
Don't take things too seriously.
Yeah.
Like, have fun with it.
Enjoy yourself.
Don't put all this pressure on yourself to, like, be perfect or to look like, you know, especially, I think it's more for women than for men in a big way.
Uh-huh.
So I think women feel this pressure to, like, look like this, you know, model that they know that guys are into or whatever, or to look how, you know, TV makes sex look, where it's all, like, so poetic and dramatic. And it's not that sex isn't like that sometimes, but my point is, you're only hurting yourself when you put all that pressure on yourself to perform.
Absolutely.
It's not worth it.
It isn't. Have fun with it.
Yeah.
Communicate.
And if you know us and you get married, we'll probably get you that weird gift. And just know, it's not because we think that you can't take care of business on your own. It's because we just want you to know, like, don't take things too seriously.
Have fun with it.
Have fun with
it. Get jiggy with it.
Anyways, I think we've probably gone far enough down that road.
Yeah.
If either of our parents are listening, sorry for weirding you out.
Sorry.
Sorry. Oh, man. All right. I think we've encapsulated it all very well.
Have we?
I think we have. The sun is setting now. The American flag is waving over the football field. It's a beautiful night. That clapping you're hearing is the song.
Okay,
it's
not, I was
this
like,
is a live album.
Did they put
We're
clapping
to this. We'll
on
destroy
here?
You. And Rachel's over here like, what am I hearing?
Did they hear clapping at the end of our podcast? That would
Anyways.
Be pretty cool. All
right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Rachel, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, anytime.
I'll have you back on again. Don't worry.
Anytime.
It's not like we live together or anything.
No, we don't, you know. That's yeah.
Despite all this, we actually don't live together.
Very far away. I'm miserable.
Oh, jeez.
JK.
Anyways, if you have any questions about anything we've talked about or anything that you'd like to add, I always appreciate if you kind of chime in. I have an email account set up specifically for the show that you can send any comments or questions. You know, I always appreciate that kind of thing. And that is ltatpod@gmail.com. It's always in the description of this podcast if you need help with the spelling. But yeah, ltatpod@gmail.com. Please let us know. I had a lot of fun doing this with you.
Yeah, I had fun too.
We don't get to sit down and talk like this very often.
We really don't. I enjoy it when it happens.
The dogs are going crazy right now.
The neighbor's dogs are going crazy.
Sorry about
that
if you're hearing the barking. Their dogs are ass. Well, unfortunately. Oh, geez. Anyways. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Like I said, you're going to get a double hitter at the beginning of this week, and I'm going to be also giving you my beginning of the week check-in, which I'm going to go record here in just a minute.
Also, train your dogs.
Train your dogs.
Don't neglect them.
We can do an episode on dog training sometime. Would you
okay.
like that?
Yeah, we'll talk about dogs.
We'll do an episode on dog training. Those of you with dogs can tune in and listen to my
Maybe not necessarily dog training. Maybe
advice.
Dog ownership.
Dog ownership, sure. I
dog
think that's
ownership.
Fair. That's a better way to say it.
Sure.
Responsibility as a dog owner.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. Sorry again. This took so long to produce.
Rate and subscribe.
Follow us on Twitter. No, just kidding. I never post anything on Twitter. I hate Twitter.
It's the worst.
We're most active on Facebook and Instagram. Give us a follow, subscribe, leave a review if you like the show. And we'll be back. You're great at this. I'm so excited to have you on again.
Thank you. Yeah.
I feel like you're
Anytime.
So nervous about it. And you're so good at it.
I don't really like talking that much.
You have a great radio voice.
I'm very introverted.
Mine's very nasally.
I guess I just have a very sexy I can just talk really well.
You do have a great voice. I love it.
Well, thank you.
Okay. We're just gushing now. We'll get you guys out of here so you don't have to
listen
to this.
Let's talk about it.